You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California's climate lives in extremes, the most variable in North America. The state experiences intense weather pattern changes from years of drought to record snowpack and rainfall. Normally, if you drive through the Central Valley, you're surrounded by sprawling agricultural fields. And at the heart of that landscape is a debate over water. Yet, if you drive through Kings County, you may see a phantom lake. Tulare Lake was once considered the largest body of fresh water west of the Mississippi. But the lake was drained following decades of dams, canals, levees to support what is now billions of dollars of agricultural growth. This year, atmospheric rivers have bolstered the snowpack and dumped rain across the San Joaquin Valley, causing flooding and property damage across the Tulare Basin. But another consequence of all that water, Tulare Lake has reappeared. It is a rare sight that can be years, if not decades, in the making, bringing with it looming risks across the San Joaquin Valley. Mark Arax is a journalist and an author whose recent book, The Dreamt Land, Chasing Water and Dust Across California, is now available. And Mark joins us about the history of the region and its impact on California. Good morning, Mark. Nice to hear from you again.
Nice to be with you again, Vicky.
So you have written extensively about the Central Valley region, but one topic that is at the forefront of news today is the impact of these atmospheric rivers on the Tulare Basin, leading to the reemergence of Tulare Lake. What prompted your interest in this region?
Well, I happen to live here, and what we're witnessing right now is one of the great California dramas of man versus nature. And to appreciate, you know, what a story it is, you have to know a little bit of history. So, I like to kind of go back to, let's say, 1840. Let's pick 1840. California is still a part. It's a Mexican colony, right? And we're 6 years before the United States seizes California from Mexico and 10 years before the gold rush. And Tulare Lake is the most dominant feature on the California map. It's anywhere between 600 and 800 square miles. And there are four distinct tribes of Yokut Indians who live along its shores. There's the Tachi and the Chunut and the Wowo. And the lake is shallow, so the women scour for mussels with their toes, and the men float in these tule rafts, these rafts made of bulrushes, and there's a hole carved in the middle of them, and they spear fish from it. They've been living this way for, you know, thousands of years. So what happens then is the American settler after the gold rush comes to this part of California, and they grab these four rivers, the Kings, the Cahuilla, the Tule, and the Kern. Now, these rivers do not empty into the Pacific Ocean like the Sacramento and the San Joaquin. They end in this lake bottom. And so what they do is they grab these four rivers, and by feet of dam, canal, ditches, and pumps, they turn the Sierra snowmelt into this crisscross of irrigation. And it becomes one of the most engineered landscapes in the world.
When you're talking about 600 to 800 square miles, what once was Tulare Lake, I mean, that is more than four times the size of Lake Tahoe. And just listening to you describe what existed more than a century ago, it seems like not only another time, but just another planet, another California.
Beautifully said. I mean, this is a place of great migratory birds. The settlers said that when they alighted, they took off. It sounded like the roar of a freight train. Okay, and what they ended up doing is they ended up taking this implement, the Fresno scraper, and they flattened the earth so that hardly rose or fell an inch. They created almost like a billiard table. That's how flat, so the irrigation waters could move across it without impediment. And so they erased that marshland, and then they erased the lake itself eventually by 1920. And two families came out from the South. These were the Boswell family, the predominant family. They were cotton growers who were chased out of the South by the boll weevil. And in 1920, Colonel J.G. Boswell started claiming the lake bottom. And he planted the richest cotton patch in the world. So this is what happened here. The rub of all that was that every 20 years or so, nature would find its way past the canals and ditches and the pumps that made the rivers run backward, and the lake would return. And this is what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. I was reading an op-ed that you wrote for the New York Times back in January, and you said that you've been through, you know, a handful of floods, you know, since the 1960s, I believe eight, but who's counting when it comes to
yes.
flood years? But given that experience, you really have this front row seat to these pendulum swings, and you have witnessed the benefit as well as the devastation that that can cause. What has this taught you about human development, farming, agriculture, and how it relates to California and California's story?
Well, this is California's story. It's a grand act of hubris. I mean, taking this landscape 1,000 miles long and drawing the borders of a state around it. And inside that state are 10, 11 different states of nature. And we tried to conquer them all. And then we had this difference in water. It fell in the north, but most of the people lived in the South. And so we decided that we're gonna even out those differences by creating the grandest hydraulic, you know, water moving system in the history of man. I know we're using a lot of greatest and mosts, but that is the story of California. It's a story of superlatives. You know, right now I'm getting these calls and emails from readers who have read The King of California and The Dreamt Land from around the country. And they're following this drama of the lake coming back. And some of them are even rooting for nature to outflank man and see Tulare Lake alive again. But there's a human devastation with this too. I was down a few weeks ago in the little town of Allensworth. I mean, to call it a town is probably too much. It's a settlement. It's a colony. This is where the first freed slaves from the South came west in the early 1900s and found this place. The problem is Allensworth was sitting in an alkali bed, salt bed, and the water was full of arsenic. So it quickly kind of dried up, but folks are living there now. And this is a place of real history. We have a state park there. And so one piece of history, Tulare Lake coming back, is now impacting another piece of history, Allensworth. And the people there are fighting to stave off this flood. And come May, we're going to see a snow melt that we've probably never seen in a century or so.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, we actually had a conversation touched upon that yesterday about what was called basically a slow-moving disaster. I mean, there's already been extensive flooding in the Central Valley after the series of atmospheric rivers at the beginning of the new year. You know, I spoke with Jeffrey Mount with the PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, yesterday, and he was the one who called this kind of the slow-moving disaster. And he explains that this time around, the groundwater extraction over the past decade has lowered portions of the Tulare Basin, creating subsidence. And that, in turn, is creating these unanticipated impacts when compared to previous flood years, like back in the 1980s. You know, how is Kern and other surrounding counties, how are they preparing, knowing, I mean, you know what's coming, and I'm sure they know what's coming as well.
Yeah, Jeffrey Mount is one of the best experts on California water and a friend of mine. And what he says is correct. Subsidence, you know, we take out an immense amount during drought. We had basically got through the 10 years of it with this flood. And that's the story of California. You know, we move from years of drought to flood. It's kind of a whipsaw. And then on top of that, you bring climate change and all bets are off, right? And so what we're seeing now is the unpreparedness of these counties and stuff for this. I mean, you know, there's a kind of arrogance when you've defeated, subdued a lake. I mean, look at, when the dams were put in the 1940s and 50s, the Army Corps of Engineers, declared the bottom of a lake a flood zone. And they set about, and they invented this word. I don't know, they set about to dewater the lake. Well, that is an act of, it's an act of great guile and will and arrogance. So, some people choose to see this as a kind of comeuppance. The old timers, I will give them this, the original Boswells and Salyers, they had respect for the lake coming back. And they would not plant permanent crops down there. They planted cotton, they planted tomatoes. But the new owners of the land, and some of them aren't even of this place, okay? They're hedge funds and pension funds and things like that. I mean, John Hancock has planted thousands of acres of pistachios down there. And we have other uses. We've got dairies that have come. I mean, mega dairies don't, there's an argument that mega dairies don't belong in California because they pollute the groundwater and they use so much water. They certainly don't belong in the bottom of a lake bottom. And then the other thing is we have Los Angeles sending its human sludge over to the west side of the lake bottom. And this is a toxin. It's spread on the land. I mean, they bring their stuff over the mountain and spread it on the west side of Tulare Lake. So as this water's coming back, you're seeing dairy waste and the sludge, the human sludge from LA polluting the land. So we don't know what's coming in the next weeks and months.
It's difficult to visualize since it's decades in the making, but I think the best way that helped me visualize was in 1983, there were two kayakers who actually kayaked from the banks of the Kern River just outside of downtown Bakersfield all the way to the San Francisco Bay. I think it took a couple weeks. I mean, that just shows how vast and how large this basin and Tulare Lake is.
Yeah, this land alternated between, severe drought and wet. And in a wet year, you could take these boats. And if you traveled rivers and lakes, you could go all the way from Bakersfield to the San Francisco Bay. I saw the lake come back in 97. It wasn't as big as the 69 flood or the flood in 83, but it was quite something to see. I mean, I remember taking the highway out of Fresno to Corcoran, ending up at the base of this levee. Okay. And this is a levee you might see in the Mississippi Delta. It's a kind of engineering that you might see in Holland. And as I climbed atop it, the smell of the air changed, the sound changed as I looked across what was cotton land just a few weeks before. It was this expanse of water. I might as well have been in the New Jersey shore. And the wind was whipping white caps past the telephone poles. And if you look closely at the telephone poles, you could see the marks of previous floods. And the speed with which nature found itself was stunning. I mean, there was shorebirds, trying to hunt fish. And so it was, it was so stunning. I mean, I got dizzy with vertigo, I remember. And that was the beginning of my my search into what was this place? What was this lake? And that ended up leading to a book that I co-wrote with Rick Wortsman called The King of California about the J.G. Boswell secret empire.
When I think about what humans have done to California, you know, for agriculture, for water needs as our population grows, and the water infrastructure that was built and essentially changed the landscape of California. I think of other lakes like Mono Lake or Owens Lake, but is Tulare Lake unique in its own circumstances, or are there other areas comparable with similar conditions?
Well, I think Tulare Lake has a unique history, yes. That doesn't take away from, you know, the other lakes. I mean, let's face it. The example for all of this was Los Angeles. I mean, it ran out of its Puny River pretty early in its development, and it went up and over the mountain 230 miles to Owens to steal their river. And now LA, you know, it wants to grow. It wants to grow suburbia across desert. And the farmers here are growing, you know, crops on ground that is no longer prime ground. I mean, they went from, you know, growing the footprint of agriculture on the best ground to then the kind of medium ground. And now, because of drip irrigation, the wonders of drip irrigation, they're able to claim the worst ground. And so the footprint of agriculture has moved beyond what is sustainable. And it's the same story of how we plant suburbs in the path of wildfire. I mean, you look at Paradise. Paradise, what an irony. I mean, 40,000 people living on this geological chimney right in the path of wildfire. So we tempt nature. This is what we do in this state. And man's will is, you know, you can admire it, but you can also see a great tragedy and lesson in it. And that's what we're seeing now. Nature has the last word, as the cliche goes.
Mark, finally, the last time you joined us, you were talking to us and teaching us about how the Armenian diaspora has shaped the Central Valley. These are fabrics of our state of California that many people are unaware of, and Tulare Lake is yet another for many people. What do you hope people take away from your writing?
Well, I just keep digging into the earth here, and it keeps telling me new stories. This is a story of how the plantation came west. Okay, we transplanted the plantation west. These southern growers brought their mint juleps. They brought their black cotton pickers, and then the Latino cotton pickers came, and the white oaky cotton pickers came. And this is the story of this place. It's you know, it's an incredible canvas, the middle of the state particularly. And I keep threatening to leave, but the stories are too compelling. So I just think there's a lot that the earth teaches us if we dare to dig into it.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of us. Thank you for staying and continue digging into the earth. Mark, thank you so much. It's always wonderful speaking with you.
Okay, thank you, Vicky. You take care.
And more importantly, learning from you as well. Mark Arix is a former LA Times journalist and author who has written multiple books extensively about the history of the Central Valley. His latest book, The Dreamt Land, Chasing Water and Dust Across California, is a national bestseller. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.